David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
We have the great and powerful Oz on the show, yes. Lorne Michaels.
The became the unintentional star of the podcast because he's the touchstone for all the Saturday Night Live people is Lorne Michaels.
Yeah, the common denominator.
The touchstone, the common denominator, the...
Detonator,
the thing that everyone talks about a lot. That's more unwieldy than the touchstone. But we were thrilled to get him, and
he's our most commonly asked guest. When will you have Lorne?
When will you have Lorne?
And he was very... cool to do this because he doesn't do a lot of stuff and he doesn't like to be bothered. And I wouldn't either. He's got a lot going on.
Yeah, I took a chance. I called him up at home and I said, Lorne, hi, this is Dana. And
don't hang up.
We'd love you to come on the talk on our podcast. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I don't know who this is, but no, I don't know. Sorry, I can't even do it.
No, he was great. So he comes in and he came to the house and did it. And, it really reminded me of being back at SNL because me, you, him, it's like sitting at read-through or sitting in a meeting and you have that reverence for him and you want to make him laugh. He's like a father figure in a weird way, you know. A lot of pretty much everything I've had is based on SNL and him keep me on there. So
he's interesting. Very interesting guy to talk to. He's as smart as they come. And I don't know, I probably should have brought up my Lorne impression, but I've talked to him about it off mic before at a restaurant, how I – then I got him at, you know – in 86 when he was in during the trying to pick the show. Mm-hmm. I still have no fucking first act. And that was the first time I got his rhythm. And then we talk about Lorneisms on the show. Yeah. You know, you never leave a hit. And he's a brilliant guy. I mean, he really is fun to listen to.
You know what's a funny one? I can't say who it was, but someone we know did a movie and he was a pretty big star and it opened very poorly. And I was in a limo with Lorne, and I go, do you think he'll get another movie? And he goes, well, not every studio wants to lose $30 million and work with an asshole. Some do. Not all of them.
Well, that's kind of his humor.
Yeah, that's exactly a good Lorne humor.
This is what Lorne would say, his sense of humor. So we're at the meeting, and it's the last show. And you go, this is our last show. We have a two-week break. So it'd be like really, really nice if the show was really good instead of a bad show. You know, he would do that.
No one take a dive tonight. We're being reviewed.
So, you know, he's just a fascinating character. We got to sit with him for a long time.
And he proved to be very fascinating. Everything he said, we hung on.
Hey, we didn't talk over. Keep talking.
Just hey, keep, we didn't even talk over. Dana.
We didn't even. So we didn't. We had
apologize for not talking over the guests. Yeah.
Because he's a great storyteller, and we get into a lot of things. We get into the current cast and his emotional relationship with cast members and how long he has been there.
50th anniversary coming
up. Never happened before in the history of television, a guy producing a show for a half century. So it's an amazing. You were incredible in this interview, David, I have to say.
Dana, you really sparkled. All right, here he is, our main man.
Main man, Lorne Michaels.
Conan's got some money coming in. We first of all, we want to thank you for coming in. You're responsible for pretty much everything in my life.
Yes.
In the comedy
world. First, we have
world.
To embarrass you and thank you. Yeah. We had no plan for this podcast, this no meeting.
This won't be in any way used.
No, we'll cut this.
It's not used or aired.
But to our surprise and delight, everyone who was on the podcast started talking and saying nice things about you, how much they love you. So we just thought, well, can we get him to come on? So here we are.
Well, I haven't done anything else.
Yeah, that's the amazing part.
Yeah. But as I said, I have a background in radio.
Ratty chips.
healthy little crackers.
Lauren's getting just snacks.
What will make the least noise? Because radio.
Can we open the chips? Make a lot of noise and then not as much noise.
Do you like Flamin' Hot? I don't know if that's for you.
I'm just reaching for
whatever's
closest.
You'll take anything?
Closest.
Anything?
Yes.
Yeah. Don't worry about the noise.
Don't worry about the noise and we'll. I'm sorry. And there's protein bars if you're stuck. So if you're really stuck, just grab those. Those are not too loud. I'll just talk to Dana for a while.
Are you staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel?
I am.
In the Margarita
and Pete
Room?
Davidson's
or?
There because they're doing this show, Bupkis.
Oh, okay. But you have touchstones. One is the Beverly Hills Hotel, which you're a huge fan of. In Aspen, you stay at the what?
Aspen was Morehouses, I think.
St. Bart's is another touchstone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Amagansett.
Yeah.
I remember when.
And now Maine.
Oh, you did finally pull the trigger.
Maine?
Yeah. Maine.
I wasn't CC'd on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Maine?
I'll show you pictures.
That's pretty far out there. I don't think.
You can't show them.
We talked about that last time. As you get a little older, you're pretty young. You want to get into the country and you want to get in wide open spaces.
Right? And you want to get to the landscape of your childhood.
Yes.
And this is as close to Canada as you can get without going to Canada.
Oh, is that what it is?
Nice. Okay.
You get sort of, you're Canadian. So, and what part of Canada, just real quick?
Toronto.
What part is this near or what part?
But you were sort of Toronto, right?
Yeah.
I told you, Dana.
But I left in 1972. It's changed since then.
Yes. And was the reason we did Tommy Boy in Toronto because of that or was it a tax thing?
No, I think that was, Paramount was just, they would have done it in Budapest if it was cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's usually where movies flow.
What was the cost of Tommy Boy versus Wayne's World 1? I just want to know about.
We were
13.5 or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or 12,
on Wayne's World?
35 days of filming. And which film is your personal favorite between those two?
We weren't 35. I think we're more like 25.
Oh, could have been. It seemed like
35
that.
35 million?
No. 25 days of shooting.
Oh, yeah.
Very quick, one take. Penelope Spheeris.
Towards the end, when Howard Koch
Hawk Koch.
was, they were doing the board and Paramount person that I was, who was giving us direction said, you know, if you can make this movie for $12.5, I'll leave you alone. And that was sort of the whole idea of it. Mm-hmm. And then we had an extra day or two and at one point, the Rob Lowe character was going to have Dennis Hopper as a father. And so there was a dynamic between the two of them, which would play off in a sense of a counterpoint. And then they said, you have to, don't have the extra 2 days. So
that went away.
To use Mike Myers' phrase, we smushed it into one character, and that was Rob.
Oh, okay.
And he was great. Mm-hmm. Kurt Fuller. That was ended up being lightning in a bottle. I only saw the previews, and I remember been told before where the Paramount guy came back. We did the previews. Mike and I are possessed while they're watching ourselves. We're kind of depressed.
Probably
and
John
he says,
Goldman.
It's got Ghostbusters numbers. Let's eat. Right? That's what he's, was that
no,
right?
We were in no? a restaurant. We were,
okay. No, how did you remember?
Because I was older.
I was dressed as Garth.
We did, for sentimental reasons, a preview in Wayne, New Jersey, because it had a multiplex.
I think that's where it was. Yeah.
And then we went to a restaurant that was happening in Soho, which had a tin roof. And everybody was ordering. Mike was in complete depression because it wasn't the movie he thought he wanted. You know, it was all that. And mm-hmm. he said, it got an 86. Let's eat.
86. Yeah. Okay. I missed
86
it by 9
for
points.
Those of you at home is higher than 80.
There's two boxes. So it means yeah, most
top
people
two
are
boxer?
In the top yeah. two boxes.
Yes. And also that it added up to that. It could be 88. It could be 91. But it was something right. where he thought, why would you want to keep talking?
Oh, we got like we won.
We're, we yeah,
got
we it. Won. Yeah. We yeah, won. Take the yeah. win. And that was sort of – it took amazing. Mike a while to get used to it. And then he went into the editing room and but it was all there. It was all there in that first cut. And mm-hmm. part of it was just how fast it moved and the exuberance mm-hmm. of it. And as I say, most people in America, when they're choosing any kind of entertainment, the phrase looks like fun – is the most
helps, yeah.
is the top.
And yeah. I figured out for myself later why yeah. so popular. I thought the two so-called losers in town, they drop AMC Pacer, live with their parents, are having way more fun
yeah.
than anyone in the town.
Yeah.
So that's like, who wouldn't want to live in that world?
I and Tommy Boy, I remember you took me to Chili's after and
is that
no, it wasn't quite
well,
as
Tommy
nice.
Boys no, was made for $35 million. No,
no Tommy Boy is probably around the same, like
mm-hmm. same thing.
Well,
because it was always from the studio, it was always, you know, these movies have to be made for a price. You know, $15-20 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go, well, we can do this for 20. No, no, I said 15 to 20. We're going to aim for 15, but we may end up at 20. But once that happened, you were left alone. I think because nobody considered it important, which is mm-hmm. a big plus.
Yeah.
You know,
and I could watch Tommy Boy and be really comfortable because I'm not worrying or seeing myself.
Yeah.
And just thought it was the start of David's film career. But sure. for Chris, it feels to me like it captured Chris completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like his physical
and it got,
comedy, his likability.
And it got the sentimental side, which was kind of him fighting for the walk through the factory sure. and the scene in the boat. And
the bagpipes.
Yes.
That yeah. was great.
It's like Three Amigos. It yeah. just gets shinier and brighter, as Paul
and,
would say.
And also, they're meant to be fun.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And everyone, I think when somebody asked me in an interview about Waynesboro, what were you aiming for? And I said, you know, really a confection. You know, because I mm-hmm. said, in a Marx Brothers movie, no one cares whether Fedonia won the war. You know, it's going to go it's going to go 80, 90 mm-hmm. minutes. It's going to be as funny as it can be. Yeah. And then it's going to good night. And everybody's happy. And right. so the idea that you're going to be tied to a plot and have to stick with scenes that didn't work because they're going to tell the story, as opposed to, you know, Wayne's World's Boy has show boy, loses show boy, sees yeah. girl boy.
I mean, listen, to yeah. Tommy Boy, we always say, like, if you went and pitched a movie of two guys selling brake pads in Ohio, yeah, we got to do this.
Of course. Like,
it just really, I think it was Lauren saying, these two are kind of funny around the office. And I think you told the Turners, Bonnie and Terry Turner, yeah. said, can you write something about that? And it was, you
they
would
great.
Get how we were goofy around the office and then said, if you can, and they did a good job of doing that. And then you kind
and
of
steered
it.
And there'd been a moment or two in Coneheads too.
Yeah.
Yeah, which had already established.
Yeah.
And Mike, mm-hmm. despite the best efforts of, you know, Mike and Dana, was in Wayne's World. And
we had a bit of a competition.
Yes.
That's what Paul would say about him and John.
You heard cheers of the audience and then they were, yay.
Yeah.
But we've lived long enough to be yes, very generous. Good friends yes. and love each other.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
The one thing I thought of my notes to ask you, why did you cast me? What was...
Originally at the show?
Yeah, on SNL.
Well, because there was no Garth. There was only Wayne at the start.
But I mean, why did you cast me on SNL?
Oh, in SNL. No,
I can answer this.
That was a huge spot, you know, and then you took me and you didn't take a lot of brilliant people.
Was
so
it Jim Carrey?
I'm very grateful for it, but...
No, I didn't see Jim Carrey. Frankie Davis.
Oh, they
someone
did.
Else. So,
they
and seen somebody him. Else. And yeah. They said, it's too big for you.
Yeah, I mean, looking back,
let me make the decision.
Well, I think you did cast it. I don't know if like a situation comedy, but like it was different. Lovitz was a flavor. Phil was a role, and somehow I fit in there, and you rolled the dice, and I'm ever grateful for it. But it seems at the time I did not have a lot of confidence. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know.
Well, I think Lovitz was there from the year before.
Yeah, he was the kingpin at the time.
Twilight Zone cruel thing. That,
you burnt the cast.
Yes, exactly.
Everyone got burnt up in a fire.
I think that was Franken. And
I sort of just skimmed that sketch. I didn't really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I sort of knew you'd fit from.
Thank God.
What was the name of the club? Igby's?
You saw. Well, Igby's, that was. For people don't know, but now I'm here with Lorne.
Yeah.
I had auditioned other times. They said, you were coming around. I didn't want to do it at the Comedy Store. And then Rosie O'Donnell was there. I got 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm waiting to go on. First of all, I'm terrified.
Right.
Because it's a dream, like everyone else. You come through the door. There he is. Then Brandon Tartikoff, the head of the network.
Tartar sauce.
And then I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm so nervous. And then Cher. And they sat down in the club. Now welcome, Dan O'Flaherty.
I'm at Igby's.
So
that was probably my only night with the two of them. But,
I know.
But we were nerves. Somewhere, and they. Mm-hmm. I think Cher said, where are you going? And I said, well, I'm going to go see somebody I think is good in the club. Oh, I'll come. And then Brandon went, well, I want to go too. Or he was first. I don't remember the order. But and they all laughed. But that wasn't the deciding factor. It was just that you had a clear – I mean, you were funny. And you could never much – anytime you talk about funny for longer than a minute, it's not good.
It's still whimsical that I found myself to that place at that time.
No, and also I'd never been there before, probably since. And as I said, I haven't been with those people either. Mm-hmm. But I do know Cher, I guess.
And when I've run into her, she says, I was there when you were discovered.
Yeah, no, no. And her laugh was so open.
Yes.
And nice. And she just wanted –
Everyone to win.
Yeah.
Also, if Dane is doing, I don't mean to jump in, but if he's doing Church Lady, Chopping Broccoli, things that literally in your head you can probably just pluck and put right on the show. There's
first show.
Nothing to do different.
The whimsy of the Church Lady, because it was part of the set, is probably 5 minutes of the character. And then I remember, okay, we'll try it. Who knew? And I worked with your ex-wife, Rosie Schuster, for a month. You assigned me to a writer. She was the one who said Church Chat because we thought of a talk show.
Yeah,
and I remember bringing the two dresses into you. One was a little more feminine, and you just pointed to the one we used.
Yeah.
And then as it turns out, it was such a great thing for the show because I had Phil and Jan coming in and being brilliant, and or Sigourney Weaver the first show, and Victoria Jackson.
Yeah. And so also perfect. Sean Penn.
And then Sean Penn, and then all these religious scandals. So again, that was a freaky, lucky thing for all of us.
I think it was like very often with the character, you have to find, or at least my end of it is, you have to find the context. You know, with Mike and you in Wayne's world, it was like he had a very specific look in mind, which was the basement, the stairs coming down. Nora played the mother.
Yes. hair metal thing.
The Garth thing was, I think you should do it with Dana, and somehow that evolved.
That was your suggestion.
But he, and then the moment it worked, it was like on a 10-to-1, and it played pretty well. Because it was fresh and had energy and it looked like fun. And it was. And then after that, Mike had been at the show 3 months, 4 months?
Something like that.
But after that, it was like, why are we in that corner?
Right.
Yeah. And you're in that corner because you designed a set that had the stairs and
an
whatever.
Entrance and an exit.
You're as far from the audience as possible. So from that point on, I think it moved to home base. And,
yes.
And that was like, yeah, we don't need the background. Right.
Which is incredibly powerful
home base
to be at home
right
base.
In front of the
you can really time the laughs.
Where the monologue is. Where the monologue is, I'm just telling people at home.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where it's like right at the audience, right down the
and
camera.
As the warm-up, which was designed a certain way, it is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
You're moving down, you know, like somebody does, now it's Che.
Right.
and then Keenan comes out and sings with the girls. And then you sort of, the lights start to go down and you know you're looking at that spot.
Yeah.
Or you're looking where the cold opening is going to be.
You're trained.
And so you get a sense of where the focus
is. It's just amazing, Lauren, that you're still there. And I've come back a few times and did update or whatever. You can't get past it. I mean, you'll never forget it. And I think that for all of us who are unknown, go on the show, and for the audience to see Will Ferrell do what he did, see how David evolved.
Yeah.
It's such an amazing, visceral experience. There's nothing like it. And the music and the way you kept it the same is extraordinary, that you didn't let any regime trick you out and change it.
What's interesting is there's four new people coming in.
And it's amazing.
Because of the pandemic, we couldn't let there was no place for anyone to go. So we kept adding people because you have to add people every year. And suddenly we have like 23 people to go. Like, this is insane.
Because the pandemic, yeah, no, take them off
and
the
everybody's
Zoom.
Angry because they're not getting enough playing time.
Yeah.
And so, and then people left. And so it was so much fun seeing these new people because they're exactly where you should start. They've never been on television. They don't know. They don't. Generally, if they have representation, it's primitive.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sort of see them, and there's like that exuberance and excitement, and there it just shows, and that energy shows. And so when you start with people who've never been on television, and the audience gets to be part of that process and live with them through it, then I used to say, I'm going to say it now again, that the four longest years of your life are high school.
Yes.
You don't have any money. You don't have a car.
Any girls.
And so staying up late with friends or staying up late by yourself to like 1 o'clock in the morning is like a really exciting thing. So when people say the best cast that ever did it, generally it's when they were in high school.
Totally.
So if they, you know, and they go, oh, well, no, the best was, you know, you and Hartman and you, you know, when you go and follow. And
then you go, when were you in high school? Yeah. You go, oh, exactly.
No, I mean.
Yeah,
it's true. And you have the time.
Yeah.
And you talk about it with your friends. That's the only game in town.
Yeah.
Especially back then, like that. I mean, there's more competition now, and it's great that you're still crushing it because with so many things to choose from, that was, I think when you have a transition kind of now where some are leaving the, you know, more familiar faces.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anyone's not as good. It's just some people get more opportunities coming up.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened. It took me longer to get my footing when we had Dana. Unfortunately, it was just too good. It was.
Oh, no. And also, I think Ben Stiller came in at the same time as Mike did.
Yes.
But he sort of saw, this could be a long wait. You know, like, because Sandler, everybody was there and it was killing it. And, and what was interesting about that time was the only people who liked it were the audience. Critically, it wasn't.
It's a golden age now. Yeah, Barstool Sports said we were a great cast. We were the best cast. And then back then, they were like, this is the worst bunch of assholes, untalented
Even
humps.
When we had, on a given night back in the late 90s, or early 90s, sorry, late 80s, we would have Toonses. I'm talking about just, we'd have a Sprockets. Maybe I'd do Bush or Perot or McLaughlin Group. Mike might do Talking Lady, whatever her name was. But we had so many. Sandler would sing a song. David would do a Hollywood Minute.
Yeah.
So there was a given moment in time you must have
Coffee
felt like,
machine.
Hey, I got a lot of
and
things
know,
to hit
here. We're doing that documentary on Jim Downey, which
I talked to him for 4 hours.
It's only going to take 10 years, but
they're going to use 3 minutes
of something like that. But my son Eddie is working on it, and he grew up kind of on the show, etc. But not doesn't really know that period.
No,
and he keeps showing me things from that period that are like hilarious. And one of them he showed me recently was Perot on Larry King. And it's so funny. It's here's a perfect me. Perfect Downey piece. You're mm-hmm. great at it.
Will was great.
Will's doing Larry King, which he's not known for.
Someone and there was Chris Kattan in there. It was people, their platforms were very exotic, and Ross Perot was the same old thing, because he's same old dribble every time. Are we going to do this? Can I finish one time? Or are you going to keep talking all the time? I mean, the rhythm of that was so infectious. Perfect. I never had more fun doing a character.
And you could do that speed. Mm-hmm. You always had that ability. That was something I saw in the audition. You could move something that fast.
If I can catch a wave with it rhythmically in my head, and I know that it's like casting a line to the audience, I finish one time?
Yeah.
And I know little that hooks, you're going to laugh hooks. Right now because you can't not laugh because that's the way I'm talking. Can you figure it that way?
With
I know
a gesture.
It is exactly like a song.
Yeah.
Extrapolated.
But you auditioned with music.
I did have a little piano thing and stuff.
Oh.
But
I'm not recommending that because it's really time intensive.
I know, I was about to say, for that reason, I'm out.
The other night, I was at the Improv doing a benefit, and I'm kind of bombing. I mean, I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
And then I go, fuck it. I did a thing on SNL called Chopped Broccoli. It's packed. So I do it and give it all my all on the piano. Standing ovation. So I should never go on and do anything else. It killed.
Yeah, I thought that story was heading to a bomb.
I only did it
Who
once.
Who do they think it is? Because people ask me all the time.
It was. We gave him a name. To me, it was just random Nigel rock star. What was he called? Derek something.
Yeah, so it's Brit.
It's a but British.
But it's not McCartney.
No, it's not McCartney. And then I buried it, but we did a sketch where the record company, it was a little too sophisticated, tells him he has to die. Because his record sales will go up, and look what happened to Jim Morrison and Hendrix. But I don't want to die. You know, it's one of those, and it laid there. But Chuck Broccoli lives on.
You know, Lauren, when you watch these auditions, it's interesting because I was newer to comedy. All I wanted to do was kill, and because my audition was different. We've interviewed a lot of these people, and I'm hearing a lot of them were at 8H, which would be just horrifying. But and it's dead silent, you know, and everyone's out there and Shoemaker's eating peanuts. You know, no one, it's like, hey, come down for the audition.
It's tough to audition.
But when I did. Also, weren't you brought in a little bit as a writer?
Well, the thing was, I came in and Dennis, right before I walked on, people were at Catch Rising Star. You might've been there. I don't even know if you were there. It was, you know, some writers came down and a handful. It was me, Rob Schneider, and Tom Kenny. And we were just doing stand-up. So we do it, and Dennis Miller comes up before, and he goes, hey, Spudling. He goes, well, you going to bring the A game? And I go, I mean, it's all the A I got. I mean, I don't know. It might be a B. But
you're not saving any
My
a,
best yeah. is might be B. Yeah. And he goes, I go, I'm saving it for another audition. for American Idol. So I go, listen, yeah, and he goes, you don't want to kill too hard. Throws a red flag with these guys. They don't want to get some road hack. And I go, so don't do good. And they're like, David Spade. I go, Dennis,
don't do good, so, do good.
I go, but I realize now when I watch comics and stuff, I look at writing. So I can tell someone has game in two lines. You know what I mean? It's like name that tune. I go, first line might be a fluke. And then they do the next joke. And I go, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
And it's like you get an eye for it. So I think you guys all had that. And I can watch someone and not see if they kill or not. I don't even almost hear it. I just go, oh, that's a good one. Oh, that's a good one. So Dennis said later, or maybe Downey said, no, we liked your writing. So I don't even know. I don't think we did that well, but that didn't matter. It was more like, oh, I like the way you put that together or that thought or that. And that, I appreciate
that. How would you
that.
Describe that? That sensibility that you look for.
Well, what I think was happening then was we had a kind of murderer's row of people that were going to be dominating for a long time. Yeah. So you were going to get to be Ross Perot, but in the
on
other
the
debate.
And
on the wide shot.
Well, that was on my tombstone.
He was going to come back. He was going to come back and do both parts.
I saw David sitting in the corner dressed as Perot, and he looked so sad, but it was just for the wide shot. It was a fluky thing, but that was, you did well.
But what I'm getting at is that there's-
You were Perot.
There's a thing which I've done a bunch over the years, which is I'll bring someone in as a writer. You know they're going to be cast eventually.
You buy some
time. But they won't go through that self-doubt why am I not getting on? And people say, I'm on, but I don't see enough, whatever.
I added that, though, to my stress.
I'll talk to comedians who've auditioned, and they tell me what they've auditioned with in the last 5 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And I won't tell them, but I'm thinking to myself, not going to get it.
Yeah.
And whether it was... Like, you're not afraid of any kind of humor, but it was something scatological, but it wasn't funny. And I could just tell it didn't fit kind of the frequency right. of you, Lorne Michaels, right. and your lieutenants. There's yeah. a certain thing, and it's hard to describe it because it's got a wide bandwidth, but there is something
you can see it at read through, and someone new puts in something, everyone goes, "Oh Jesus!"
And it's a little off putting.
Yeah,
read through is an honest room.
Yeah,
there's no Bernie's not there. You know, like so. There's not and the network's not there. There's no booming laugh. Right. You know, from so it's got it didn't play. And same with the show. When something doesn't work, there are no laughs on the air. So
yeah, who do you blame?
That's the high wire.
It's the fairest thing in the world, yeah, really.
No. And also you feel you burned it.
Yeah.
But there are people like Bowen I brought in as a writer.
He's great.
And you want people to see how the process works because it's figuring it out those first few weeks that, you know, that's it and that's cut. You know, like that, and how fast it goes, and costume changes, and Wally's pointing at a line that changed, or the writer forgot to tell you.
I think Chris Rock ran into that problem of, you know, we were stressed that and frustrated we weren't getting on fast enough, but Chris Rock comes in and they're like, "You're Eddie Murphy now, and you're on in 7 sketches," and Franken's screaming at him about a Confederate. He's playing a general, and he's going, "No!" And I'm like, poor Rock, he's in too much. Like, it's too much right away.
Yeah.
And here's the cards, and here's this.
Well,
and I think it got him off. It was a tougher situation for the guy who's one of the funniest in the world.
Yeah, but you knew, I mean, at least I knew he was really good.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
and eventually.
But normally you get to develop in the background.
Right, you watch a little bit. Yeah.
Phil and Jan and I were in the cold opening, and I'd never done sketch comedy, just stand-up.
Yeah.
So my first show, and I didn't realize later, I guess I knew I was before the monologue, but I didn't know I was in the cold opening.
Right.
That's how green I was. We were just in the first one. It was Game Show Psychic. I don't know if it was Jack Handy.
Is that what it was? Jack Handy.
Jack Handy.
Sounds funny.
You know,
right?
I would answer the questions, and Phil was a perfect, and Jan. And so we had no time to really acclimate, but it was kind of nice. Everyone was really involved. But this is something Higgins said, and I don't know if you made it, but that you basically wrote the Constitution of Saturday Night Live, and then you see all these incarnations. So I'm a baby boomer. I'm doing late 80s stuff. Yeah. And then you're the constant. And then you're seeing what kind of Will Ferrell stuff or Bill Hader humor, and then Kate McGinnon. And so you're adaptive in a sense. You're observing. So these new four people, are you seeing something just a little 2022 different?
One of them, by the way, is from Arizona.
Shut the fuck up.
And I said, and he said, that's where David Spade's from.
I thought, famous.
They told you
it was like a credit.
Scottsdale Jr.
He said, "Believe me, we were a little. We got only one."
But and also the changing culture of comedy. But you're still there, and you're adapting, right? I mean,
yeah, and I think the room is great, you know, and NADH, you know,
oh yeah,
and nothing so like
hallowed grounds,
and it's a safe space. Mm-hmm. So you kind of people relax into it. I mean, it's scary for the auditions, of course.
Yeah,
but it's also, at some point, you have to bat at Yankee Stadium if you're going to be in the major leagues. So pretending that that won't exist and you go right from a club to on the air wouldn't work.
No.
Passing through that threshold, because it's scary.
No, this is DraftKings.
Stockholder, just a disclosure, I own DraftKings shares.
You don't own all of it, do you?
I wetted my beak, I took a taste.
I did a party for this guy at Gillette Stadium for his wife's birthday, and I did my crummy stand-up act, in full disclosure. I play DraftKings when I do fantasy football, so I do have it. Rewind it back to the days of chillaxing on the beach and all-day fun with spring break on DraftKings Casino. Play exclusive games like Fan Fave Rocket. The excitement is endless, the vibes are right, and the cash prizes
could be
huge.
Could be huge.
You like money? I don't know. Dan, do you like money?
Oh, I don't know. I could take it or leave it, but I like DraftKings, I'll tell you that much.
Some people don't like money. If you don't like money, don't play. New players, start playing with just $5 and get $100 back instantly in casino credits. Download the app and use code FOTW to book your one-way ticket to fun with DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Listen up, Dana. Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly.
21 plus.
Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per opted-in new customer. $5 wage required max. $100 in casino credits awarded, which require one-time playthrough within 168 hours. See terms at casino.com, DraftKings.com/promos. Restrictions apply.
Getting engaged is special for so many reasons. You know, you plan the perfect proposal. You've probably been proposed to a lot, Dana. Celebrate the
love. I proposed to myself a couple times. Far.
I do in the mirror just to
do
see.
Do you take yourself here?
You look forward to the love you'll build for the rest of your lives. The only part that's not so special, wah, wah, shopping for an engagement ring. You don't know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, which most guys don't, you got to hustle over to BlueNile.com. That's where they come in.
That BlueNile.com is the original online jeweler. Since 1999, they've helped millions of couples create their perfect engagement ring.
With Blue Nile, you can create a bigger, more brilliant piece than you can imagine at a price you won't find at a traditional jeweler.
Nope. They're committed to ensuring that the highest ethical standards are observed when sourcing diamonds and jewelry, David.
Blue Nile also offers a diamond price guarantee, which means that they can usually meet or beat a competitor's price on a comparable diamond. That's what you don't want to find out later, that you spent way too much, because they cost a lot anyway. I mean, they're diamonds.
Yeah, you're off the reservation when you're going door to door and going into all these jewelry stores and they're selling you, and then you have a much better way to do this. You don't want to find out that you paid multiple months' salary on a ring. Right, you could have gotten at a much better deal. I mean, I'm just going to say it. Blue Nile's a no-brainer.
When you make a lifelong commitment, so does Blue Nile. You get guaranteed service and repair for life.
Yes.
And don't worry, your secret's safe. Every Blue Nile order is insured and arrives in packaging that won't give it away, because that can ruin it. Sometimes if I was getting a diamond ring, I would make sure they put on the outside porn so you wouldn't think it was a diamond ring.
I always have it say big, non-surprising diamond ring. That'd be on the outside of the package. No, you want it hidden in secret so that the loved one opens it and is doubly excited because they didn't see it coming.
They offer 100% satisfaction guarantee with guaranteed free shipping and returns. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code FLY at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code FLY at BlueNile.com.
Let's say it again. That's $50 off with code FLY at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com. And for you personally, because I always saw you kind of as a coach in a way,
That's literally what Jason Sudeikis calls me.
You're always doing sports metaphors. You complimented me once third person, said, Lauren said you reminded him of Don Mattingly. So I was like, that, and I looked it up.
Take it.
But you see all these personalities come and go, and have you gotten more astute, or that it surprised you? You kind of go, well, this cast member will be like this. I think this one's going to do well later. I mean, you must have some intuitive sense, or is it all just sort of surprising sometimes? I mean, like of these four you've just hired,
right?
Well, you know, do you have a sense
about,
of
maybe 10 years ago, somebody who was new to the network, but, you know, like was a senior person. We were having dinner and he said, can I ask you an SNL question?
And I went, well, that's nice.
Sure. No, it was great. And he said, you know, the update with Jost and Che? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's working? And I said, no. He said, oh, you know. And I went, yeah, no. It's a thing of like, the way I say it, which is unpleasant, is that all babies are ugly unless they're your baby. And after 3 months, people say, what a beautiful baby. Mm-hmm. And you have to live through that period of people not being good. Somebody blows a line. Somebody comes in on the wrong foot. Somebody gets a cue late. Wally doesn't – the card doesn't come up. Right. It's all that. And people go, I don't think that guy's that funny. And you go, no, he is. And I think when you see chemistry and you sort of know – they're going to work well together. You and Chris.
Yeah.
You know, it was just there from the beginning. It was there off stage, but it was also very clear on camera.
Well, it seems like the audience starts to discover you and like you because you get enough bass hits. And then you as a performer and David, we just get more confident.
Right.
And that feeds on itself.
Also, you go from however successful you thought you were to famous. And that yeah. transition is just different. Suddenly, in the first season, we had a limo for the host. That was the, that was the extent of our budget. Yeah. But and at the party, John Belushi would quite often go and sit with the host towards the end. And then as they're getting into the limo, he'd say, you know, so John would say, I'll drop you off. And he dropped the host at the hotel, and then he would just drive around all night with his face. Like, people, limos were rare then, mm-hmm. so who is that? And then he'd just be, you know, hand on the roof.
Yeah, fame is—
I like when we, first of all, we didn't have cars back then. Yeah. It wasn't that far long ago, but to the set, which probably was better to have because it's snowing and they're like, yeah. Marcy's like, Spit, are you here? I'm down at Manny Hanny. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I'm trying to get there. I live on Upper West Side. Yeah. But in snowstorm, and then I get there, and then afterwards we got to share. Like, you know, made sense. Cast gets a car. Mm-hmm. I'd share one with any feature player or whatever. And then and Norm would take one to Atlantic City. Anyway.
Where he did very well.
Where he did very well. Marcy's like, I'm telling Lauren immediately. But well, I was going to ask you about, you just said something about Farley. Do you remember this stupid story where Farley was dating Aaron at work? And
yeah. I remember that.
This is just someone that worked at the office, very nice, very cute girl. And then on the break, they broke up and they came back and she started dating Steve Martin. And so Farley comes back from Wisconsin and Sandler and I are in the office and he goes, so he's smoking. I hear Aaron's got a new fella. And I go, yeah, but he doesn't know. And he goes, well, he might be richer, but he's not funnier. And he's not better looking, and he's not more famous. And we were like, whoops, all three. And he's like, shut the fuck up. And we're like, you can't get better than Steve Martin.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
So Lorne.
Yes.
So Lorne.
I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
Look at this. It seems to me like you love it when the cast and the writers are melding. You don't want either side to really dominate completely.
I think I made the choice because when I worked on the show Laugh-In, which was a number one show, to which I contributed almost nothing. But I was a junior writer, but we were never at any read-through.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go to the studio. We were in the writing offices.
Just write and pass it, and then that's it.
And other people would rewrite it and whatever. So it wasn't what I thought working at a comedy show would be. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of elevating the writers, because every person from the network, and particularly everyone in the control room, goes, oh, the writers can do no wrong. But the point with it is, it's that collaboration between a performer and a writer is, and then the performers all learn how to write. Do you know what I mean? Or at least how to recognize, because the performers know rhythm and timing. You know, that's too many words. Cut that back.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And the writer's theoretically thinking about content of some sort.
They don't like to trim.
Yeah.
No, they do. I would not tell like to trim. Al and Jim, I go, with a bush cold opening, I go, you got to cut some words out because I feel like I'm doing homework.
Can't do 13
pages. I feel like
pages.
I have to get through it. And they did it. But yeah, it was.
And they do it immediately because they never talk back. They never ever argue with you or whatever.
I didn't realize how much they all wanted to be on camera.
Yeah.
Till later.
And then you saw Change Bank with Jim.
Change Bank was great. Yeah.
Silver tones, man.
Commercial parodies were another secret weapon.
I think there's just a thing of watching people on a stage really enjoying themselves, feeling comfortable. When that level of confidence is there and you know that you got it, it's just a different thing. And it comes through at home. You just can tell.
It's exhilarating. On the 40th, because Mike and I were closing the show, which I want to talk about the 40th because I think it was sort of magic. But I said we should either be very offended or very flattered because it's a four-hour show, and there we come as Wayne and Garth. And we so happened to land it so beautifully.
Perfectly,
and Kanye West was there, and we kept going to him, and I felt so in the pocket. But God, you had to fight the nerves because everyone was a famous person.
That was a tough room. And yet, and worse, because the seating was screwed up. Well, I don't want to blame anyone.
Well, the 40th was just a fly by the seat of your pants. I mean, it wasn't a normal.
People were still coming in, and I had to send to Jimmy and Justin out. So they really took a bullet, you know, like because people were moving in, still seating, and they're performing.
Because the audience was only celebrities, right?
Yeah.
And it was only live at 8 o'clock.
Well, yeah, former hosts,
music.
Cast.
Yep. And then you had a spillover room, and people were mad there in the spillover room.
That room was pretty famous, too.
I don't know.
I don't know. And by the way, I don't think there's any plus ones.
Yeah.
It was just...
And the 50th will have no plus ones.
It's fucking zero.
Well, what do you think of the 50th? I mean, isn't it surreal?
Yeah. I had to give an Emmy speech, and I hadn't planned on Emmy.
Oh, that's right. Congratulations. Yeah.
Oh, thank
you.
We
win again.
No. Yeah. No.
It was like 7 years in a row or something?
Yeah. I mean, six.
Sorry.
Six. Good still.
I'm thinking about next year.
You have to write this stuff down later. I think I was going to say, you know, like... I don't want to say, well, I'm getting ready for season 48 because it's insane. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yes, there was 5 years I wasn't there, you know, after the first five. But it's – you just sort of go – and the other thing that's familiar to people who are joining the show is the school year. Mm-hmm. You know, that we come in the fall, take Thanksgiving off, we take Christmas off, you know, Easter, whatever, and spring break, and then it's summer, and you go away. Mm-hmm. And the original plan was not. The network just wanted us to do three shows a month all year round. And I went, the seasons are going to run into each other. And also, it's so – such a pressurized environment.
It's beating,
you have to get away from everybody. I mean, for me, because I want to kill everybody by the end.
Oh, yeah.
And you just brutal. Want to get out.
Yeah.
And so you go away, and around the end of July, you go, I could go back.
You start to miss it, yeah.
Now, when the network or the people you talk to about the show try to convince you to do something, how do you navigate that? I mean, have you ever lost an argument? Because it seems like you have a winning percentage of keeping the show quality or its
if
brand.
If it was anything to do with religion— particularly in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
There was – Jim used to write this thing called What If? And it would always be written in by a 10-year-old paper boy from Altoona, Illinois. And it would be, what if Spartacus had a Piper Cub? You know, it's like those kind of
right. –
and then we do a reenactment of it.
Oh, okay.
And at the time, state senator in New York, in arguing for capital punishment, said that if the Romans hadn't believed in capital punishment, there would be no Jesus and there'd be no Christianity, which seemed insane to me. But I understood how you could get there logically.
Thinking.
And the movie Straight Time, which was Dustin Hoffman coming out of, you know, on parole and his criminal friends trying to get him back into crime. So we did it as Jesus does, you know, gets off with 3 to 5, and then he some of the apostles are going, come on, one more miracle, no one gets hurt. And, you know, now to me it was just comedy, you know, but it really got because you'd have to know the relationship between me and Howard, because in the first 5 years he'd be like, well, we can't just do pop. And I go, well, we want to do this. And so that week we had Keith Jarrett, and it was like jazz piano, and it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. But it was like now this sketch, which was 9 minutes, we're arguing up until air, really at 11 o'clock, at which point it's like, I'm going, really? Yeah, you're denying the divinity of Christ, which I go, we're not really. It's, you know.
It's also a comedy show.
Yeah. And maybe that's the Canadian part. But all I'm getting at is it was like an absolute no. Not even that. And I said to one of the network people who was in the room, who I'll spare, I said, does this offend you? And he said, listen, Lauren, I'd let you put cock sucking on the air if we get a 40 share. So I'm the wrong guy to ask. And I went, oh, this is really helpful. Thank you.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Oh, yes, you heard me right. You can talk to an actual human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. Now, you're out there, you have acres and acres, hundreds of acres. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. No. Weed control, which you hate, fertilization, aeration.
Huh? Can't stand it.
Among others. They'll do all that, so you can do literally anything else. Dana's out there like Yellowstone. You have better things to do in your free time. I know you do. You don't want to focus on lawn care.
True Green is too good to be true, is what I'm saying. But it is true. Right, David? Because you're going to have more time to do things that you want to focus on.
All the hard work, and it gets you to a great lawn. That's what you want. You take care of everything else you got to do in your life. You're very busy. Let True Green take care of this one thing. Get it off your plate.
You know what? I do have some space. I want to put some grass down. I'll call you later, True Green.
Talk to True Green. Where can listeners purchase or learn more? You go to TrueGreen.com. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour.
Whoa.
They offer a satisfaction guaranteed, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. That is such a cool thing.
Good job, True Green. You're nailing it.
Well, we had Mr. Clockworthy, I think.
Yeah.
In the 80s. And in Church Chat, I initially had penis in there a lot, and he wanted some of those cut out. And so I substitute for penis. I put in more your throbbing, bulbous area. It was way more pornographic, but that's good. No penis.
Yeah. And I think that for us, you know, because it's live and because we were on the honor system at the beginning, we're still on it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was at the Emmys the other night, and a bunch of people, you know, said fuck, and you go, yeah, you're going to get a laugh, you know, but is that, it's not going to age well, you know? Yeah. And, but it is that move, the temptation to do it. And for us, we would lose affiliates, we would lose, I don't think you lose anything anymore, but it, there's something about, and when we were doing Wayne's World, I'd been, in 1990, I was in, anyway, I was on a trip in Europe. And,
on a yacht.
And I was with people that I wasn't normally with. And they talked about watching the show with their kids. Now, no, you know, in the 70s, it was not supposed to trust anyone over 30.
Right.
And it was like we were doing it for the people we knew, and we didn't think the rest of the country cared. Mm-hmm. And they really didn't until Mr. Bill showed up. But they were talking about sitting there with their teenage daughter and how great it was to both be laughing at the same things as a family. Anyway, I didn't have kids, so it was kind of, I thought, that was different.
Schwing and Sphincter Says What?
We were doing that.
The Madonna.
The Madonna thing. Yeah. With the Evian bottle.
Right.
What was the movie, Truth or Dare?
Yeah, Truth or Dare. I was in a unitard. She goes, look at the thing on that guy or whatever. Yeah, I was. It was.
And they were doing the Evian bottle like that. And she wanted to do it. And I'm going, if I had a 16-year-old daughter, that'd be like really cringe
tough.
And we do lots of things that are shocking, but I think you can't just be shocking.
I think it's great to have guardrails. And so you can be a little naughty, but you can't just full blown.
No.
I mean, the penis sketch where we're all at a nudist colony.
Fantastic piece. Fantastic piece. Really holds up. Yeah.
Didn't it take a year or two to get it on?
We lost Toyota. We lost 2-3 big sponsors because people would boycott a dealership. And then
because of that sketch.
Yeah. And because people would say, whoever has the dealership in Mississippi is calling central headquarters going, there's people outside here protesting, and why are you sponsoring that show?
And guys at a nudist work. Colony. We had a slat, so you'd see our legs. I think Hanks was on it.
I think it was Smigel, right?
Yes. And it was just, nice penis. How you doing? How's your penis? And we said penis like intentionally like 300 times or something. You missed that one.
Yeah, and the repetition of it was where the laughs were.
Yeah,
I don't think it got great laughs.
Right.
No.
No.
I don't think so.
But there are certain writers who never don't hear laughs, so...
You never don't hear laugh. Yeah, I know. They go kill. Yeah. Actually, but like old ones like Cheeseburger, Cheeseburger, Pepsi, Pepsi. Those I don't think kill the first time around. I don't think Conan's kills the first time around. And you train the audience. This is good. And then later they go, oh, those are the best. And you go, it didn't even work.
Very often the first one's not a hit.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we did the very first show. We're still trying to find out what areas of the studio had sound. And we were on the air. There was a piece that Rosie wrote called Bee Hospital. And it was a maternity hospital for bees. And the Franny Lee did the costumes, and they were great, the bee costumes. And every now and then, they're just men pacing. And then every now and then, a nurse would come out and say, it's a worker. Oh, it's a worker. You know, it's a and it was just that. It's a worker. Oh, yeah, it's a worker. And then it's a drone. Oh, it's a drone. Yeah. Anyway, it played to silence because you couldn't hear it. It was in the far corner of the studio.
It's terrible.
So the only note we got from the network was the bees thing didn't work, so don't do that anymore. So the second show, the bees came on and tried, and then Paul Simon was hosting and said, no, the bees is cut because it didn't work. The third show, they snuck on in a sketch with Rob Reiner and Penny Marshall, and then there was a long. More and more, they're taking their people are in the backer bees. You know, it's like,
That was like a big thing.
And then Rob went into a long speech about how the bees didn't work. It's not funny. And then Belushi did that a variation on that speech from Billy Jack. Of like, you know, you have Hollywood writers, you have this, you come here and we, you know. Like,
yeah.
And they kind of walked off to One Tin Soldier, you know, like.
One Tin Soldier.
And so that was then the bees were there.
That's what we loved about that show.
Yeah.
It was anarchy and it was so different.
Yeah.
So.
And also, don't tell us what's funny.
All right, guys, that was part one with Lorne, and we're going to do the whole part two next week. This has been a podcast presentation of Cadence 13. Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes. Available now for free wherever you get your podcast.
No joke, folks.
Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13, executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment.
The show's lead producer is Greg Holtzman, with production and engineering support from Serena Regan and Chris Basil of Cadence 13.